You're listening to Rendezvous with a Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet, and story is everything. We're your hosts tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell.
And we're so happy you're with us.
We are. You've just been listening to Hot Texas with a Hot Texas Swing Band from our friend Alex Dormont. And now, who is on tonight?
Well, we want to say very quickly that we are live from Jingle Bell Ranch, because that's where we are always are in December. And our two guests, and they have just joined us on screen. We have Henry C. Park, and he's the film editor for True West Magazine, and he catches us up with the Western news the first Thursday of every month. And Tom Goodman. Tom is Goodman, but Tom to his friends, award-winning author of the book The Last Man, a novel of the 1927 Santa Claus bank robbery. Oh, my goodness, what a read. So welcome, gentlemen. We're so happy you're with us.
Thank you.
Glad to be with you.
Henry, where are you joining us from tonight?
I'm joining you from Brooklyn, New York, where it was snowing this morning.
Snowing, all
right. Did you have snow? Is it still snowing, or is it there? No.
It didn't even stick. I managed to get a quick picture before it melted, but we're expecting plenty more.
Oh, my goodness. And Tom, yeah, where are you?
I'm joining you guys from Austin, Texas, where it's not snowing.
And we're here at Jingle Bell Ranch.
And it's not snowing either.
We have a quick, not trivia question, but we have a quick holiday-related question for each of you before we get started. Henry, do you have a favorite holiday film?
Probably It's a Wonderful Life.
Very good.
Okay.
And Chris, very wait, popular. I would say a tie between that and Christmas Story. Love them both.
Yeah, we do too.
And Tom, do you have one?
Well, is Die Hard a Christmas movie? No, that's a running joke on the internet, isn't it? I would actually agree with Henry on It's a Wonderful Life and probably A Christmas Carol.
Christmas Carol.
We like that
Christmas
too.
Christmas Carol or Christmas Story? Yeah.
Christmas Carol for me. Mm-hmm.
Christmas Carol for you. Yeah. Okay. We love it. We should take a little poll all month long as to what our guests. Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Well, what are your favorites, guys?
Well, my favorite movie of all time, regardless of season, is the original Miracle on 34th Street.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then
The three you fellas mentioned I like. You know, Wonderful Life, Christmas Story, and Christmas Carol. Is that Christmas Carol?
Yeah, you like Christmas Vacation. Yeah.
we forgot about that one.
How can you pick just one? Yeah. Well, we are so delighted. Henry's going to give us his monthly Henry's Roundup. Go ahead, Henry, the spot's all yours.
All right, thank you. Well, there are a couple of new Westerns in the offing, one that's just been announced and one is entitled In the Cradle of Granite. It will star Mexican actress Melissa Barrera. She's best known for In the Heights and the Scream films. It'll be the first English-language film from Costa Rican director Ariel Escalante, whose Domingo and the Mist just premiered at Cannes. The screenplay is by first-timer Jay Holmes, based on his novel. Barrera plays a struggling, widowed mother who finds a dead outlaw on her land and has to work with the bounty hunter who killed him to collect the reward. The picture that just wrapped, actually a series, The Abandons, is a 10-parter for Netflix from Kurt Sutter, who created Sons of Anarchy and Mayans MC. He's also the producer and the showrunner. They're so secretive about this one that I can't find any pictures from it anywhere. But it stars Lena Headey from Game of Thrones, Gillian Anderson, who is just wonderful as Margaret Thatcher in The Crown, Ryan Hurst, Nick Robinson. Here's the official pitch. Quote, as a group of diverse outlier families pursue their manifest destiny in 1850s Oregon, a corrupt force of wealth and power coveting their land tries to force them out. These abandoned souls, the kind of lost souls living on the fringe of society, unite their tribes to form a family and fight back. In this bloody process, justice is stretched beyond the boundaries of the law. Unquote. They've been shooting it in Calgary since May, wrapped in October, and surprisingly, Kurt Sutter left the show just before it wrapped, maybe over the running time of the first screened episode.
Wow.
Now, if you're in Southern California but not a member of the American Cinematheque, here's a reason to join today. Yesterday, they announced they're having a members-only screening on Wednesday, the 11th, at the Arrow in Santa Monica of Horizon, an American Saga, Chapter 1, and writer-director star Kevin Costner will be there to talk, along with the costume designer, composer, and sound editor. I saw Costner do this in New York a couple of weeks ago, and it was fascinating. Now, you remember that 4 weeks ago, we had a great talk with Longmire creator Craig Johnson about his new book, Tooth and Claw. Yesterday morning, Craig posted on Facebook that, quote, Netflix is officially dropping Longmire from its lineup at the end of the year, even though the show is still alive and well in the ratings, unquote. Now, it is available on Paramount Plus and Peacock for those of you who do not yet subscribe to enough streaming services. But to me, it's just one more reason to say, hang on to your physical media. Not everyone agrees with me. My wife recently found a stockpile of my old VHS tapes, and as I was out of town, she held a bonfire. People keep telling me discs are dead. Supposedly, Sony isn't going to license Blu-ray technology anymore. But then why are Courtney Joyner and I scheduled to do audio commentaries on 3 movies this month? Now, maybe it'll be 4K instead of Blu-ray, but whatever it is, series or movie that you like, get a real copy of it, because streaming stuff can disappear at any moment. Now, the current True West featured my articles on the 50th anniversary of Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid. I have 3 articles on the INSP blog about the Gunsmoke auction, featuring interviews with Janet Arness and one of the big auction winners. In the current Henry's Western Roundup, Kevin Costner talks about his plans and hopes for Horizon parts 2 through 4. And you can read all about this and so much more at, and I'm stopping the www, just henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
Thank you, Henry. Well, it's, you know, we always look forward to catching up with you personally, as well as to hear about what's going on. And it was so interesting to see Craig's post yesterday.
Yes.
About what's happening with Longmire. It also sounded like maybe if it moves somewhere else, there might be some new something in the works. He wasn't totally clear what that might be.
Well, you know, if we go back to the when Longmire began, it began on A&E, and it was produced by Warner's Television. A&E, when they initially did the deal, they didn't expect it to be as successful as it was, so they didn't ask for a big piece of the show. And then when it was a hit, they then, after the fact, wanted, this is all from Craig, by the way, then they wanted a big piece of it, and when Warner's wouldn't give it to them, they said, well then, we'll cancel you and we'll badmouth you. Which they did. If you remember, when it left and went to Netflix, A&E was saying, we canceled it because it was the audience was too old. So, but apparently,
we are the audience here, right here, right?
Are we too old?
Yeah.
You can never be too old for Longmire.
Right.
Or too young.
You know, Henry, in 1923, second season's coming up, Sunday night, perhaps.
Oh,
that's great.
Of 1883.
Yep.
Of,
yeah, no, 19.
Well, yeah, yeah, but the series, the 1883 series.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very excited that 1923 is going to get with 1883. The problem, in a nutshell, is there's no characters left to bring back.
No, I know. It just sort of was the beginning of the family, you know, history.
But at my money, that miniseries is the best Western thing done for television since Lonesome Dove. I just think it's wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Henry, we're going to shift gears a little bit. We're going to put Tom Goodman in the spotlight. Jim has a little bio, I think. Do you want to go ahead and...
We have something here.
Yeah, and we're going to be talking about... I'm holding up the book while we hear about Tom.
Okay, Tom Goodman, award-winning author of the novel The Last Man, closely based on a true crime from December 1927, and that the press called the Santa Claus Bank Robbery. Tom first ran across the story when he lived in the small Texas county where it all took place. He currently lives in Austin, where he was able to conduct extensive research on the true crime at the Texas State Library and Archives Commission. An author of several nonfiction books, The Last Man is Tom's first novel. Welcome, Tom.
Glad to be with you guys.
Yeah.
It is a riveting, somewhat astonishing read.
We had a lot of fun with it, didn't we?
Well, I'm not sure I'd say it was fun, but it certainly had you wondering what was going to happen to everybody. And it also has a bit of a redemption story, which Tom may share as we get into the conversation. So, Tom, we're so delighted to have you with us.
Yeah, glad to be with you guys, too. Yeah, one of my early readers called it Southern Gothic with a happy ending. So Southern Gothic, of course, never has a happy ending. But
Southern Gothic, yeah.
I think he was trying to highlight that redemptive aspect of it, you know?
Well, I think as readers, we're always looking for not necessarily a happy ending, but we like there to be, it can sometimes be closure on something. Sometimes there's a sequel. We don't need total closure, but... Somehow you've taken us on quite a journey, and I felt at times breathless and really wondering, oh my goodness, where is this going? Okay, we got the end of that guy, and we know what happened to that guy. And the last man, we learn he is still standing at the end of the book. No spoiler alert. That's the title, The Last Man. He is standing at the end of the book.
You know, that was a couple of words we ought to talk about.
Yes. We met you at the Western Writers Conference, and you were there, of America Conference, and you were there partly because you were the 2024 Spur Award winner for Best First Western Novel. So, Tom, what was that like to get the word?
That was very exciting to get the phone call that I was going to win the Spur Award for Best First Novel. And it was a fun experience to be there and to receive it. You know, it's kind of nerve-wracking. I speak for a living, as Jim, you and Bobby Jean know. Mm. I serve as a pastor. That's my day job. So I'm speaking publicly all the time. But the most nerve-wracking 5 minutes was that public speech receiving the award at the banquet.
I'm sure. Yeah. I think, well, and Bob Yoho, the chairman, if that's the right title for the Spur committee, gave it to you, right? You got it.
Yes.
From Bob. Yeah. Yeah. And there were all those awards, you know, it's really fun to see ahead of time. I mean, it's unlike a lot of award shows. We know who the winner is ahead of time, but that doesn't take away from the excitement of meeting people throughout the conference that you know have just won an award, and the whole conference, the final award night is just like red carpet treatment. It's just really a wonderful, wonderful time.
Yeah. We got another award here.
Yeah.
We got a Will Rogers Gold Medallion.
I was equally pleased with that, and I showed up in Fort Worth for that award reception too. Pretty grand.
I
have to pinch myself.
And that category, I think, was Western Maverick was the category that award was in, right?
Right.
Yeah. So you must be working on, usually we ask at the end of the show, what are you working on? But because of you just having won some awards, are you back at it, working on something new?
I'm working on another story. This one is also based in Texas from 100 years ago, 1906. A little known story that was dubbed the Pistol Packing Preacher. Now, just that title, doesn't that make you want to learn a little bit more?
Oh, yeah. Sign me up.
It sounds like a new kind of book.
We'll be beta readers, Sign us up.
All right. Count yourselves in.
Henry, before we get more into the book, do you have any kind of a comment or a question for Tom before we kind of delve a little bit more into the book?
Well, I've not finished the book, but I've read quite a bit of it. I'm enjoying it very much. It is a wonderfully tough telling of a very gangsterish story. It brings back all my favorite Warner Brothers movies to me. And I was wondering what it was like for you to make the transition from writing nonfiction to fiction, and frankly, just doing it so well. I love your dialogue. It's so natural.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. I have been writing nonfiction for 40 years, books and articles that are related to my role as a pastor. But this was my first chance at a novel, and I sat on it for about 25 years. I lived in the county where all this, in the 90s, where all this happened in the 20s, and often heard people talk about the most infamous time of the county, and researched it because I'm a history nut. So I just researched it. But then I just shelved it away. I thought, I'm no John Grisham. But it kept bugging me that there was, to my mind, a big part of the story that was never told when the story was recounted, and that was the account of the survivor, the last man. And so I decided I needed to pull that out and try my hand at it.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to ask that question, or do you want to talk about the cover?
We want to talk about the cover here.
Cover. Okay. I'm holding it up again.
That too often.
It's just a gripping cover. And to those that might be listening audio and don't really see it, we have a character dressed obviously as Santa. We recognize him with his back to us.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we have the title, The Last Man. But to the right of Santa, Tom, what is that to the right of Santa?
That would be a noose. Yeah. The cover designer had on first pass everything right, except she had this sort of Victorian lamppost. She needed something in the foreground, and so she put this Victorian lamppost, and I said, this doesn't fit right. Let's use a noose, because there is a public lynching, in this story. And she did. I'm very pleased with the cover. She did a great job.
Yeah. And Santa is holding his hand, he's got a gun. He's we don't often see Santa with a gun. So it's kind of gripping from the front. Henry, what did you think when you saw the cover?
I laughed. It's a wonderful composition of unlike elements. Although it's funny, it just made me think of the French Connection. It's starting with Popeye Doyle as Santa.
I had thought about that connection.
Okay. How interesting.
You want to tell us anything more about your writing background? And of course, you did just share that it took you 25 years to really decide to get this story going. Let's see. Should we just, maybe we, what time are we at? Okay, you know what we're going to do? This is the perfect time. We're just going to take a very short I'm going to step away for a moment. Books are the best gift. And we are going to step away to tell you about one of the places you can order Tom Goodman's book, The Last Man, a novel of the 1927 Santa Claus bank robbery. We're giving you the whole title so you can find it easily, as well as Henry Parks, The Greatest Westerns Ever Made and the People Who Made Them is also available. And let's see, shop for books of all of our featured author guests on our Out West Shop affiliate page on bookshop.org. And when we come back, Tom is going to give us more details about that 1927 Santa Claus bank robbery. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. We're talking about Henry Park of True West Magazine, Thomas Goodman, and we're talking about his novel here, The Last Man.
It's just such a great
story of this 1927 Santa Claus
bank robbery. I just have to keep holding up the title, the cover, because it's so much more interesting than we are.
Would you like to tell a little bit about the storyline of the book, Tom?
Sure. So, as everyone has heard, it was called the Santa Bank Robbery. The Associated Press actually dubbed it that almost from day one. Mm-hmm. So this happened 2 days before Christmas in 1927. And the very next day, the Associated Press was using that line. And it was front page, top of the fold, in Texas newspapers and national newspapers in some cases for almost 2 years. On the back of the book, kind of has a quick summary, so maybe I'll just read from that. When Santa Claus enters a Texas bank just before Christmas in 1927, no one expects him to pull a gun. The fake white beard, his identity from his neighbors, while he and three others take everything. But their easy heist goes sideways fast when armed lawmen and citizens assemble to claim a new reward for dead bank robbers. Taking hostages, the gang forces a path through a frenzied and bloody shootout, setting the whole Lone Star State on their trail. One bandit dies in the getaway, one is executed in the electric chair, one swings from a rope in a mob lynching. The last man finds a life he always hoped for, if only he can keep it. Mm-hmm. So that's maybe a pretty good summary of it.
That's an excellent summary, yes.
What, at that time, 1927 and around, a little later maybe, what was the banking climate? I mean, what was the banking climate in those days? Was it
clearly was a lot looser than it is now, because on average, four banks a day in Texas and other Western states were hit by robbers, and these guys thought that they had an easy heist on their hands. They were wrong, but they thought they had an easy heist on.
Yeah, and that kind of brings us to the point you pointed out before. There was some sort of law. It wasn't quite a law, but the banks come up with some sort of reward for $5,000 to bring in a dead bank robber.
That's right.
Dead or alive, just plain dead.
Dead.
That's right. It was called the Dead Bank Robber Reward. It came out maybe 2 months before this robbery. And in fairness and defense to the Texas Bankers Association, they were tired of so many banks being hit. And I think it was there trying to deputize citizens by promising them a $5,000 reward for a dead bank robber, the poster said, and not 1 cent for a live one. And $5,000, that was a controversial.
A lot of money.
It was. It was controversial from the start, but it was also attractive from the start, because $5,000, if you do the math, is about $85,000 in today's money. So I think there would be a number of us who thought we were pretty good shots for $85,000 on the line.
Mm-hmm. You know, where you described it, I thought the way that it friends away to the populace there in the towns, it was kind of interesting seeing when there was a problem or they thought there was a problem, everybody come running with a gun. The hardware stores would loan them out.
That's right. There was a hardware store across the street, and there were a few men who ran in and, you know, I will pay you Tuesday for a handgun today. They wanted in on this. Mm-hmm.
There's, of course, right away, you know, you get us right into the lobby of the bank, and where we are off and running. And of course, they really didn't think of some things like that Santa's a lovable character. And so when a Santa shows up, you know, people, especially a couple of days before Christmas, people want to go over and, hey, Santa, they didn't recognize him as someone they knew, even though he knew who many of them were. And there are two little girls. Tell us about those two fourth graders or third graders.
Right. Yeah. So they just happened to be in the bank, I'm sure, feeling very bad because they were unaccompanied. They had come in to make a deposit. They were in the bookkeeping room in the back of the bank when Santa Claus came in. The scheme was for him to come in first and then his three accomplices to come in shortly after him. So these girls come out of the bookkeeping room, and of course, they're delighted to see Santa Claus there, of course, until he pulls a gun and demands everybody hand over their money. And they end up, so as the robbers are trying to get out of the bank into through a side door where their getaway car was parked, an estimated 200 rounds of ammo were shot into and out of that alleyway in a 15-minute period of time. And the bandits had to use human shields, or they felt that they needed to protect their lives. So they took citizens, bank employees, and bank customers, including these two fourth-grade girls, out as human shields. And then the girls were taken with the robbers in the getaway car so they could successfully get out of town, and the largest manhunt in Texas up to that time.
Mm-hmm. You know, and go ahead, please, Henry, go ahead.
I was just, while I was reading that, I was thinking about how many times we're watching, you know, high-speed chases on television now, and suddenly the person they're chasing, the thief or whatever kind of criminal, they say, well, they're driving kind of erratically, and it might be dangerous, so the police will stop following them. And they back off. And how different from a world where bank robbers are driving away with two little children in the car and everyone is pumping lead at them. As
right.
If, you know, it's a whole different world.
Yeah.
You know, you talk about those two girls, and I thought they had a certain, you know, a little maturity beyond their 4 years of age because
fourth grade, yeah.
We they're in the car. We're talking about the car and the getaway. You know, one of the actors, you know, one of the characters says, well, we got to stop those guys behind us. So here, we got these nails, and gives them to the little girl and says, throw them out the window.
So they
get flat tires.
Yep. Yeah, it was one of the only things they had planned, you know, that worked. I mean.
Right. Yeah.
Well, you know, in this day of all the CSI shows and all, I couldn't help but wonder, as I'm reading The Alley, I can only imagine as a writer what that was to write all of that action that was happening and who had guns when and where. And to me, it was also a little bit like I might imagine that scene in Coffeyville when they try to rob the two banks at the same time that are on opposite corners, and everybody in town is like, we've had it, and they're all coming out with guns. It was kind of like everybody has a gun, which we've just been talking about. But and now I've lost my train of thought. But I was wondering about forensics. Like, you know, there is, and they go to trial, there's all this about, well, who shot who, and we didn't really have ballistics at that time, I'm guessing. There wasn't really study, right?
Right, yeah. I mean, everybody today who watches CSI or shows like CSI, I read an article one time where defense attorneys and prosecutors expressed some frustration that juries expect every trial to be like what they see on CSI, right? With the very high tech solutions to finding out who did the dirty deed. But of course, in 1927, there was no CSI, and you can imagine bullets and shell casings they found in an alleyway where that much gunfire had taken place. I don't know how effective that would have been anyway. So they were very dependent upon eyewitness testimony of who saw who pointing a gun at someone.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And of course, besides Lewis not making it out, dying of his wounds, we lose two police officers.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the chief of police for Cisco, Texas, and one of his deputies, so one in the front of the alleyway and one at the back, were mortally wounded and died of their wounds in the next couple of days or so. Which, by the way, if you ever see this, it, like I said, it shows up every few years or so in Texas Monthly, Texas Highways, national newspapers, and so on. And sometimes it is presented as a comedy of errors, kind of a Keystone Cops silliness. But it was an incredibly tragic story, too, you know, especially mm-hmm. with these officers being killed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Henry, did that story ever hit your magazine? Did anybody ever write about that in the West?
I have not checked the index. I will, but I got to say, I was really surprised. This was totally new to me. I had never heard of this, and I'm a big crime fan. So
yeah. Let's see. Part of another part of the book that's so very interesting, I think, as a reader, is you take us. Not only do we have the courtroom drama pieces. The aftermath of what starts as the bank robbery. But we follow some of the main characters into what happens to them after the robbery. And we are in prison. We experience, let's talk about the labor camp. Bobby is tell us a little bit about what happens to Bobby and where he ends up, because it's he ends up differently than everybody else. Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of Texas prisons had work camps, work farms. If you ever saw Cool Hand Luke, that was, of course, based in Florida. But and maybe a decade or two after Bobby's in work farms in Texas. But it's very similar. Brutal conditions, hard work, injustice. And I was able to find a number of firsthand accounts from ex-offenders who had written about their experiences in work farms in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. That's preserved in the Texas Library and Archives. And also, so that was really helpful for researching and writing those scenes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I bet, you know, see, we were talking about that just today. And it seemed like that... those camps, and we, and I think the terms used to be sometimes chain gangs.
Right.
That was a southern program. Did we have that in the north too, or is it just in the south?
Seems like it's southern.
Yeah, I sure don't know.
I don't know. You also take us into the prison where we are on death row. And we learn quite a bit about what it is to be a death row inmate, the routine, the daily routine. And then, of course, there is a little green door at the end of the pathway. And we experience several prisoners doing that walk to that little green door. And the other prisoners trying to sort of see and, you know, around what they might be able to see from their very limited viewpoint. And then you take us, you, the author, we do trust you. We trust. We do experience one of the of an electrocution. How much research? What did you have to do to research life on death row, and then, of course, what happens because you make it seem just like we're just there. It seems so very real.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, one of my readers said I should have put a content warning because he started in on that chapter at 11 o'clock at night, and it kept him awake afterwards. Even though it's not super graphic, but it's just intense, isn't it?
It is.
The newspapers.com is very helpful for those of us who write historical fiction, and all executions, of course, were covered by newspaper back then. Texas State Library and Archives has some very helpful information. And then the Texas Prison Museum in Huntsville, which is where the Department of Criminal Justice is headquartered. There's a lot of helpful information, including the electric chair. Old Sparky is
Old Sparky.
And it's there. You can see, you can't sit in it, but it's there for you to see.
I don't think you'd want to sit in it.
That's right.
That'd be too. That'd be over the top reality.
That's right.
let's see. This is based on a true crime, and obviously you've done the research. But there is, and Henry was talking about the dialogue just being so rich and so perfect and on point. I think you also probably had to introduce some characters, as authors do, to move the story forward or to fill in gaps to help the story make sense. Did you have to add some of your own imagination into the story?
Yeah. I love nonfiction investigative journalism, like Killers of the Flower Moon, for example, the book. But it would not have been a satisfying nonfiction book to write this like Killers of the Flower Moon, because there are some gaps in the historical record that I would have had to take some guesses on. I think the guesses that I took as a fiction writer are accurate. Case in point, the Board of Pardons and Paroles no longer has paperwork indicating why they recommended that they grant a conditional pardon for the last man. I think my guess as to why that was done is accurate, but it's nevertheless a guess. And so the book is fiction and not nonfiction. And it was just a lot of fun to come up with the motivations and the dialogue, which of course I wouldn't have been able to do if I was trying to write it like investigative journalism.
Yeah. You introduced to Bobby a character named Willie. And we both really liked Willie.
He was one of my favorite characters. We know historically that the last man, the real guy in history, had a religious conversion experience. And that resulted in a changed life, and that changed life resulted in an openness for the governor to give him a try at being a free man. Yeah. What we don't know is what led to that conversion experience. So Willie was introduced as a way of trying to make that feel as natural as possible. It's the best way to say it.
Yeah. I think you did a great job there. I think a lot of great philosophy went between those two as I'm reading. So I think I was impressed.
Yeah. Henry, do you have it? We're going to take we're going to step away again for just a moment. But Henry, before we do you have a comment or question or observation you'd like to share?
Actually, I'm sorry, this is so out of left. I was thinking about death row, and years ago, I was delivering pizzas. There was a guy who was famous at the place I worked because he had delivered pizza to Alcatraz death row.
Wow.
Was it the last meal?
Wasn't even supposed to. They had order for it. And another driver was sent, and he was already heading to a different delivery, but was closer to Alcatraz than the other guy. And so he just cheated and got ahead so he could deliver his.
Oh, my goodness.
And the guards got to eat that one.
That's a great story. We are going to be right back with Henry and Tom right after this word from our Rendezvous with a Writer sponsors. And we just love them. If you are a writer, find out what our friends at Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison and Janelle Madison of Clicks by Madison has done December graphics for us that just have us just jingling. We're just jingling the bells. We'll be back in just a moment after a word from Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison. Don't go away. Rendezvous with a Writer is sponsored by Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, your author publicity and book marketing team. Experienced, trusted, effective. Contact them today at bluecottageagency.com.
Okay. Welcome back. Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. We're talking to Henry Park and Thomas Goodman. It would have been a great time talking about bank robberies in the old West.
Texas.
Almost the new West, actually. Yeah. We're talking about the 1927. Did you want to ask about a question? A question about a character?
Well, I have a question. As we move, you're writing historical fiction, and we just mentioned a number of the characters, of course, are real, but then there are some that you had to introduce. Was it hard? Was there your characters? Did they surprise the ones that you kind of had to create? You had in mind for them, but did they ever surprise you? Or did they say, "Tom, I'm not saying that"? You know, did they knock on your shoulder and say, "I want in, create me, I belong in that story"? Tell us about a little bit about character development.
There's a minor character that shows up near the end. She's in her 80s. She runs a boarding home. Her name is Vivi. And she walked into the story. She surprised me and turned out to be one of my favorite characters. For some reasons, hopefully that will be obvious to people as they read the story. So yeah, I've heard writers of fiction talk about the twists and turns their plot ends up taking, or a direction a character insists on going that they had not planned on going. But I experienced it myself a little bit in writing this.
I also really liked Beanpole.
Yeah, Beanpole was fun too. I needed a character that the last man to Rusk County, to Henderson, Texas. He had no prior connection there. And so he requested to be released to Henderson, Texas. And there he met the woman that became his wife. But we have no record as to why he requested to be released there. So Beanpole was my invention to connect him from prison work farms to Henderson, Texas.
Yeah, I like the scenes with Beanpole. I think he deserves to have his own story. I think maybe we should have a Beanpole book.
That's right. Beanpole. Spin something out, yeah.
Did you want to, we had some other characters. Do you want to throw out another name, or I'm looking at time, this, another name or two?
We have this county attorney, Joe Frank Sparks. He's kind of stereotypical of some prosecuting attorneys, isn't he?
Yeah, I there was very little historical information I could find on him other than what role he played in various trials. So I portray him as a very ambitious, very young, ambitious prosecutor who knew he would make a name for himself by being in such a high profile case, maybe something that he could parlay into, political position later on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was thinking, as you're talking about him, I was just thinking, if this thing happened today, we'd have to have every channel, every streaming device, every newspaper person in the country covering this thing. This thing would be crazy.
Yeah, it'd be a TikTok for sure.
Those of us on this call can remember the OJ trial and how it was 24-hour coverage. And I would say the Santa Claus bank robbery was pretty much like that. I mean, there was no TV back then, but newspapers were the dominant source of news. Mm. And like I said before, front page, top of the fold, almost every day, something about the Santa Claus bank robbery or the breakouts from prison of the last man and this kind of thing for 2 years.
Do you think it would have captured the imagination, as you just said, for 2 years if he hadn't been dressed as Santa Claus?
Oh, I think that it definitely added some color to the story. And I think that's what continues, even though you three have read it, or most of it by this point, you know it's not a Christmas tale.
Yeah.
But, of course, a cover with a gun-toting Santa Claus, you also know why this story also is always told right around Christmas time on podcasts or news media and that kind of thing when it is covered. So I think that's another, there's a quirkiness, this person who felt like he was going to be able to get away with it by dressing as Santa Claus.
Yeah, yeah. I'm looking at time, and gosh, we actually have a little time for you each to tell us a little bit about what's coming up next. Henry, what's coming up next for you?
Oh, gosh, I wish I knew. Sorry, I don't have anything really snappy prepared. I'm working on a book proposal right now, but I'm not going to bloat it by talking about it.
Okay. Very good. And one more time, Henry, where can people find you?
Oh, they can find me at Henry's Western Roundup, .blogspot.com, and of course on my either the Henry Park Facebook page or the Henry's Western Roundup Facebook page.
Okay. And Tom, where can people, besides bookshop.org, where else can they get your book?
So the easiest thing to do is probably go to thomasgoodmanwrites.com. At thomasgoodman.com, there's a link that will get you to where you can find it in all formats, and audiobook, ebook, hardbound, paperback, that kind of thing. And I would also add at thomasgoodmanwrites.com, you can get a free download of a book called The Santa Claus Bank Robbery and Photos. Mm-hmm. And it's a 26-page mm-hmm. book of the photographs of the actual characters and places behind the novel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jim, you have a quote or two to share.
We have quotes.
Yes, we have quotes.
Now, the first quote is actually, it's from the book. And it's a conversation between a couple of characters, Bobby and Willie, as I remember, in prison. And Willie says, "In my bunkhouse, I've seen a lot of fatherless boys. They all men, but really, they just fatherless boys. I tried to tell them, it don't have to be that way. I will receive you. I will be a father unto you. And ye shall be my sons and daughters, saith the Lord Almighty." And Bobby asks, "How much of the Bible you got memorized?" It's a good passage there, and I just took a little bit out. And now, sort of, a couple of fun quotes. This is from the notorious bank robber, John Dillinger. "I don't smoke much, and I hardly ever drink. I guess you could say that robbing banks is my only bad habit." And now for the bank robber Willie Sutton, when asked by a reporter, why did he rob banks? He said, "Because that's where the money is."
That's right.
Oh, gentlemen, we're so happy that you were with us tonight. And to all of you listening, whether you're listening or watching live, or you catch this streaming later, this is episode 113. We also want to thank Sam Hassan of LA Talk Radio, Blue Cottage Agency, and Clicks by Madison, and OutWestShop.com. Next week, join our guests. We'll be starting with In the Limelight with Louise Carnachon, and her book is Work Jerks, How to Cope with Difficult Bosses and Colleagues. And I'm very interested in getting into this book. She'll be with us, and then she'll be followed in the spotlight. Another gentleman we met at the Western Writers Conference, Rivas Z. Wortham, Broken Truth. It's a thriller. I did start it this morning and I cannot put it down. We really look forward to speaking with Louise and Rivas next week. And I think that's all we got. Yes?
Yep. We appreciate you folks being on. It's been a lot of fun.
And glad to be a part of things.
We're changing the little ending format, right?
Just a little bit. Do you remember?
From the Jingle Bells, since it's December, it's always a great day out west.
Keep writing. We'll keep reading. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.